Have you ever thought to yourself, I don't know if I have what it takes? Thanks for joining me today on the Parable Podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Zapchenk, and today we're going to have a conversation with a pastor who has been so encouraging to me, and I've had a soft spot in my heart for him as a young 20-something just trying to figure out life. Listen in as Pastor Daryl Merrill shares one of his most challenging seasons.
And I didn't even realize what I was going through, and I had so many friends afterwards like call me and say, I had no idea what you're going through. Why didn't you reach out? But when you're in that moment, and this is a good thing, don't beat up your friends that don't reach out to you. They don't even know what they're doing sometimes, and you be the one to reach out.
Here's my conversation with Dr. Daryl Merrill Jr. Well, Daryl Merrill, welcome to the Parable Podcast. I was just thinking how many years that we've known each other, and I think it's been about 15 years.
Wow. It's so funny because I was talking to my wife last night. I'm like, yeah, how long have we known, you know, Eric and Danielle? And I couldn't even put a number on it. So good for you.
Yeah. Well, I have to think I base everything off of our kids. Edie was born. Just so for the listener, one of my first jobs I ever had was a promotion manager at a radio station, a Christian radio station. That's how we connected. That's how I met my husband. 13 years is that. That's how old Edie is. And yeah, gosh, but we did events with you, Ascension Convention, you guys have. So you are the pastor, I should mention.
I am.
I'm the lead pastor of Christian Life Church. And you're also like the president. You oversee Christian Life College as well. So, you know, just a few things going on.
Just a couple. Yeah. No, it's it's the job of a lifetime. I love it. I love all the people I get to meet. And yeah, Danielle, I always enjoyed our time together, you know, and again, that was many, many years ago. But, you know, you meet a lot of people in the radio business and especially in promotion side of things. And it can get a little phony at times. But I think what stood out to me and our entire staff was just how genuine you were and like just how we can. It was like an immediate connection and just like an immediate love and your husband Eric, just love him and his kindness. You know, you don't meet people like that in the business very often. And just to watch how God's now used you as a gifted communicator and the podcast and everything, it's been fun to watch you. And that's it. It's like I always see you guys as the real deal because and again, just talking to Eric, it's not that you guys show up to church. I mean, you show up to church. I mean, you guys work so hard. And then on the weekend, you're serving at your church. And I'm always blown away by that. And, that just speaks volumes about you. And again, probably why when we first met you guys, there was this like instant, we're attracted to this spiritually strong couple. And so, yeah, anyway, hooray to you guys. That's for sure.
Thank you so much. Yeah. You know what? I was trying to like explain like abilities and like certain things that are just innate qualities to our daughter the other day. And I just said, like, you have this. I don't think you even realize it. I think that's just like one of the cool things that like God has gifted me with, but I see in other people, like you can't teach that, you know, it's just a part of my personality. And I guess what I love too about you, Daryl, is that, you know, I've met a lot of pastors in my life and I know that everyone has their off days, their busy days, but you are like so encouraging. You see me as an equal rather than be like, you know what, I'm the pastor. Cause that has happened. A time or two. And it's so uncomfortable. And in a world where like Jesus was so approachable and authentic and real, I greatly appreciate that about you.
Well, that's neat. Yeah. That's what I love about Facebook is we can stay connected and I can watch your kids grow up. And I see you guys in them and I'm like, oh my goodness, they must be handfuls at times but I just love following and watching. Aww. And thanks for your kind words. That means a lot.
You're welcome. Yeah. So you've been married to Leslie how many years? Like over 30?
Yeah, right at 30. Yeah, that's our anniversary's actually in a couple weeks. So yeah, I am the luckiest man alive. I say that all the time. She hates when I say that. She goes, no, don't use the word lucky. And it's like, no, I'm lucky. I really am. So
yeah. How did you and Leslie meet each other?
Yeah, it's actually a funny story. I was at Christian Life College, and I had graduated. I was on the seminary. I was actually moving to Cincinnati and to go to seminary. And she had been a missionary in Scotland, and she had come home, and she was in her 30s, and she walked through the door, and she was gorgeous. And I was just like, I got to meet this girl. And it's like, all the cute girls come when I leave, right? Is that how that works? But anyway, move away for a few years, and she had started attending the college. And by the time I got back, she was done with college. She was actually working in the office. And when I came home, she was there. And I'm like, oh my goodness, it's Leslie. And by this time, I'm a pastor. So, I know it sounds funny, but by this time in life, I was like, I'm probably not going to get married. I'm a pastor. How do you date somebody when you're a pastor? Yeah. And she had kind of thought the same thing too. It's kind of like, well, you know, I haven't met anybody. So I guess, you know, and it's right when we both kind of were like, oh, I guess, you know, this is the life we're called to. It's funny because we weren't, because I was a pastor.
Yeah.
We didn't really date that much because it just was awkward. And so we got married. It was funny because we're like, after honeymoon, we're like, we don't really even know each other. Like we really liked each other. And it's funny because she was absolutely beautiful, but she just loved God. I mean, she had always given up everything to follow God. And that was the most attractive thing. And it was just like, yeah, I want to be with that kind of person for the rest of my life. And it was funny, like within the first year of marriage, it was really hard because we didn't know each other. We're completely different people. But we just made this decision that we're going to spend the rest of our life becoming friends, because we weren't really friends when we got married. A lot of people say, I married my best friend. It's like, I knew her, but I didn't know her. And so, it was just it's a really interesting story. And while it may be difficult at first, it's been the best thing ever. And I just encourage people, get help too. Like, go to counseling. Counseling like revolutionized our life, because we had been single for so long and thought we were going to be single. Like, you become married, but then you still live as a single person, and that just does not work. And I had blind spots, she had blind spots, and again, because we're so different, just having someone else in the room help us navigate that, learn about ourselves, because you have blind spots you don't even know, and nobody's there to tell you, you know, like, so I'm a big proponent of marital counseling and getting help and going, and just don't give up. I mean, that was the other thing, and now it's just, it's better than ever, and we're like right there at empty nester age, and it's just like, this is the best thing ever. So really cool.
I think it's like those expectations where you said like you're living by yourself for a while. And even with friendships, like there's that unmet expectation. But when you are physically living with somebody day to day, it's that stripping away really of, you know, selfishness just like different things that we have that we didn't even realize. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. It is over the course of our marriage or any relationship, really, like as you continue to build over and over, you do love them in such a more deep and powerful way.
Oh, yeah. So, and that's funny, too, because I was a firstborn, so I had no trouble with selfishness. And she's the baby of the family, and so she has a different kind of selfishness. And so, you know, it's funny, like, when we first, you know, it's like, yeah, marriage is there to cure you, if you allow it to cure you of selfishness. Yeah. And then when kids come along, you don't get a choice, right? You are being cured of selfishness, whether you want to or not. So yeah, we have an interesting story, but it's been a great story.
You guys have three beautiful boys. Like you said, you're almost empty nesters. But I also, like, I was just going through your bio today, because again, you don't like tout this and you're like, say, hey, let me just tell you about my scholarly achievements. Okay, there was Yale, Oxford Divinity, or Oxford, Yale Divinity, Princeton Theological, and in 2012, you won Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Why don't we play Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Here we go.
Is that in my bio? I didn't even know that.
You didn't put that in your bio, but I did find it. So I was just like, what?
Yeah, that's funny.
So has learning just really been like a passion of yours? Because that's a lot of work for you to continue to grow in your education and learning.
Yeah, you know, it'll be part of my parable story probably, but you know, it's funny, I just kept going to school and didn't stop for a long time. And in all of it, you know, and it sounds funny, but I kind of fell into everything. And education, a lot of times people are like, oh my goodness, but it's basically jumping through hoops. Like, you take a class, you have to pass the test, to write the paper, whatever. It was funny because I was at seminary, and this is how old I am, right? So there's a bulletin board at seminary, and it's like, do you want to study at Oxford? And I'm like, that sounds really cool. And had no idea, like no idea. need. Yeah, I just wanted to go to England. So I ended up there, and that was through a different college, but then ended up in the university. Yeah, so that was a crazy journey, and ended up doing most of my doctoral work there, and then ended up Yale, did a postdoctoral thing at Princeton. So yeah, I just accidentally, I guess, fell into those mm-hmm. things. And I think we should be lifelong learners. I mean, I've kind of mm-hmm. stopped now, you know, but teaching or learning, I just always want to mm-hmm. learn, always want to grow and feel like I need it. So, but it definitely energizes me. There's an adage, and it's really true. A little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing, mm-hmm. but there's also this other part of it where, like, the more you know, the less you know. You know, it's just like, wow, there's so much in God's word. There's so much in life mm-hmm. I don't know. So I think if you ever arrive or think that you've arrived, that's the beginning of the end. So I love to read, love absolutely. To study. Always been yeah. part of it.
Daryl, you said you're the firstborn, and your dad, he founded Christian mm-hmm. Life Church. Mm-hmm. Is that right? So growing up, even though maybe you love learning then too, were you like, I want to be a pastor? Or was that something that you really had to be like, I don't know, just because my dad does it?
Yeah.
You know?
That's funny you ask. Definitely a part of my story. So our church beginning is very similar to the new movie out, Jesus Revolution. It was the early 70s, and it was wild. Like, I mean, I remember people... You know, it's funny because, like, back then everybody had beards and long hair and stuff. So what really stood out to me at our church was people came barefoot to church. Like, these hippies wow. came barefoot, and we met in a gym, and it was just funny because here's my dad, like, in a 3-piece suit. So, and because back then, you know, God's moving and people are getting saved, and we're baptizing people in a lake, and there's lightning all around, and we're just apparently not bright enough to, you know, I'm just a little kid watching all. I mean, it was just like the movie. It was crazy. It was a wild moment in time. But my dad was a teacher. So I remember he was like the opposite of a hippie and older and stuff, but he would teach them, and they would just sit for hours listening to the Bible. And so it was just a really exciting time to become a Christian. But to be a pastor, that was not on my radar ever. So no, I didn't even mm-hmm. think about it. I think I remember when I told my dad I'm going to be a pastor, he was more surprised than I was, because wow. just it wasn't even, yeah, wasn't even a thought. So...
Now, you said if you're firstborn, so you have other brothers and sisters.
I have one sister, and she's 4, almost 5 years old or younger than me. So, yeah, it's really interesting. We're really close now. We care for my dad together. But growing up, it was one of those odd moments where we never went to school together, really, because, you know, we never went to the same. I guess we were maybe at grade school level, like maybe a little bit, but never went to the same junior high or high school or, you know, or obviously college. But so our kind of two separate lives, like, oh, she was my little sister. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't really close. And now we are. I feel bad about that now. But, yeah, you're like, oh, I had a really cool person in my life I didn't even care about.
Yeah.
Well, you're just selfish.
It goes back to, like, as a child, yeah. as a student, like, there's so many times I look back and I was like, gosh, I was so selfish.
I know.
But you just don't know. Like what you said, we never arrive. Like, that's something that we're just still growing. And, like, the beautiful thing about it is now, Daryl, that you get to have a relationship with your yeah. sister that you can truly love.
It's true. And that's so beautiful, because it's interesting. Like, you know, I never realized this growing up, but because it was like, we didn't call it church plants back then, but it really was a church plant. My mom worked full time. My dad worked full time. My sister was really little. So, you know, I was alone a lot. We're with mm-hmm. friends, but just mostly alone. And so I mentioned we care for my dad. My dad's 90, has Alzheimer's. And so my sister and I have come together, and our families have come together to care for him, because we'd like to do that as best we can. And it's funny, because now Jody and I are talking all the time. We're super connected. And I know, because I deal with families all the time that have aging parents and situations, and there's a lot of conflict, and we haven't had any. And just, we've just said, you know what, we're not going to fight about this. And almost like with Leslie and my wife and I, it's like we're becoming friends now. I mean, we've been friends for years now, but just really close. And so we'll, you know, it's funny, because watching TV with my dad now at night, we'll put on Andy Griffith just before he goes to bed, just to watch. And I'm sitting there watching Schwarzenegger, it's with my dad, and I'm realizing I never, growing up, I mean, when I say never, I mean never sat down with my dad and watched TV because he was so busy and my mom was working nights. And it's almost like God, in these final moments of his life, because he is super pleasant and kind. And all, and again, that I know that's not everybody's story with Alzheimer's, but just to have these moments with my dad, it's like almost God giving me a gift here at the end of his life.
Yeah.
And just, again, watching an episode and just laughing because he's like, I've never seen this one. This must be a brand new episode. I'm like, yeah, Dad, they just made this one last week. But no, just it's just so fun just to, you know, to have that moment that I didn't have before with my dad or with Jody, my sister. And, you know, God is very gracious because a lot of maybe what we missed early on, we get later on in different ways. Yeah. And so I'm grateful, very grateful for this season right now.
That is a hard season. I can't imagine it. I know many people who've walked through that as well. What would you give as just like some encouragement? Because it's hard, but you're right. It is a beautiful time as you know that end of life is coming. Just like to honor that. What encouragement would you speak into somebody who's walking through that?
That's a great question, Danielle, because everybody's journey with Alzheimer's, dementia, aging parents is different. And we've had an interesting perspective, Leslie and I, because both of her parents, well, her dad suffered from dementia, her mom from Alzheimer's. My mom died of Alzheimer's. Her dad died of dementia. Okay. She's actually with her mom today, and I'm with my dad. So it's every story is different. Like sometimes it's mean and harsh and abusive, and other times it's sweet and kind. And it's heartbreaking. It doesn't matter if it's good or bad. It's heartbreaking. I remember when my mom would have Alzheimer's, and she would come to church, and she'd sit right behind me. And, you know, right before we go up to preach, you have the greeting time and shaking hands. And my mom would look at me and say, I should know you, right? And I mean, that would just break my heart before I'd have to go up and speak. Yeah. But yeah, mom, it's me. It's your son. I love you. And, you know, just it's, you know, I think embrace all the emotion. That's the first thing, because there are a lot of things that come up from our childhood in those moments, good and bad. The feeling of being alone as a child, and then, or the feeling of love. You know, it's funny because when my mom passed, and everybody's different with their parents, but there were just some things I would have liked to have talked to my mom about, just kind of things I'd like to have dealt with. And I remember I'm in my group, I have an accountability group of guys, and I'm like, that ship sailed. I'll never have that conversation with her. And they're like, just go be with her. Like, just go sit with her. And I would, you know, it's funny because I never realized this till I'm now the caregiver. Anytime I'd show up to the house, my dad would leave because he's just like, I can't take it anymore kind of thing. And so I was like, why do you run out the house when I get here? Now I get it. So he'd go out, the caregiver would be gone. I'd just sit there and read scripture or something and just, you know, and she couldn't talk. She would just lay there. And I remember all of a sudden, those conversations I wanted to have, they just didn't matter anymore. And it was like everything melted away except my love for her. And I could feel her love for me. And so it was one of those moments like, I wonder if this is what heaven's like, where all that garbage begins to just disappear. And it's like the only thing that's left is like presence, is love. And so if you can get to that point, that's a great place to get to. But even if you can't, I didn't realize what caregivers went through till recently. And it's just like, you're doing the work of Jesus. Like, you are Jesus in that situation. And Jesus doesn't leave us in that situation without his presence and his help. So lean into him. Lean into him. And I know it's hard because right now it's a good season with my dad, but it wasn't a good season with Leslie's dad. And it was hard, and it was abusive. Mm-hmm. It was strange. And it was, but we also knew, like, okay, what would Jesus do, you know, in this situation? And so they can't take care of themselves anymore. They don't even know what they're doing anymore. So again, just, you have to let everything go but love, and get help too. Like, you're not the only one going through it. Anytime you get isolated,
absolutely,
there are support groups everywhere. You have friends. There are things in probably the town in which you live that you can ask for help. There's so many good resources. Mm-hmm. So don't do it alone, but knowing you're doing God's work. That was a long way of saying, just keep going. Don't give up. It's hard. It's hard, man.
Thank you for sharing that, Daryl, because it is a vulnerable place, you know, and sometimes you're right. If we don't have people do link arms with,
oh
gosh, it feels so alone. It feels like you're the only one. And I think that's why stories matter to me, is because when I hear bits and pieces of other people's stories, you're like, oh wow, we're not exactly the same, but I felt that same emotion. I totally understand where you're coming from. So I guess with that, I'd love for you to share, like I told you, you were going to share like multiple parable stories before we even get there. So Daryl, I'd love for you to share one of your parable stories today with us.
Yeah, it goes back to what we talked about a little bit when you asked, did you like expect to go into ministry or did something you always wanted to do? And it really wasn't. And I'm not saying that out of false humility or anything. Like, it wasn't even on the radar. It actually is a part of my education story, too. It's like, I didn't think I had what it took to be a pastor, because I watched my dad, who was great at what he did. And I watched so many other great people in my life. You know, you do have bad examples all around, too. But I just kind of knew they were bad examples. So I just was really impressed with the people that I knew. And I was like, man, that's not me. I couldn't do that. And I'm not gifted in a lot of ways. I can't build things or fix things, or I don't sing, I don't play instruments, I don't do any of that stuff. And I was just like, I watched all these other people, that including my dad, who were great at all these things. And just a gentleman in my life said, I think you'd be a great pastor. And I'm like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. We really, in our church tradition, we believe in, you know, prophetic words and just words of knowledge and things. Yeah. And so he said, no, I really think you're supposed to be a pastor. And I'm like, nope, you're wrong. And he goes, how about if you would just pray about it? And I did love God, so I don't think that's ever been an issue. Like, I knew I'd always serve in church. I knew I'd always be close to God and follow him, but just not in ministry. And so I did. It took several months to pray. And sure enough, toward the end of that time, I felt God leading me in that direction to be a pastor. I'm like, oh my goodness, I had already made all these other plans and was going to do all these other things. And so I'm like, all right, well, God, I'll try it, but I don't think I'm cut out to do this. And I don't think I'll be very good at it. But if I feel this leading, I'll start walking in that direction. So I started walking that direction, went to Bible college and got my degree, and still didn't feel ready. And so that's part of my education story. It's like, I don't know that I was called to seminary. It's like, I just didn't think I was ready to start. So I went on to seminary and kept doing that. But it was always this thing like, God, if we're going to do this, I really need you. And so I felt God helping me in school. I felt until being hired full time. I mean, I volunteered at any church I was at, and in seminary and stuff. And so, yeah, I always had this like dependence on God, like, God, I just have to have your help or this isn't going to work. So, you know, a little over 30 years ago, started full-time ministry and then got married. And we talked a little bit about that story. And it's the same thing. It's like, God, I need your help. I don't know what I'm doing here. And so that desperation for God just, it kept like, okay, God, I really, really need you. Our firstborn was born, Luke, and he's born with a lot of complications. And we didn't know if he'd live or die. And it wasn't that he was a preemie. It was kind of funny because we go to the NICU and, you know, all these preemie babies are there. And Luke's almost 10 pounds when he was born. So he's easy to find my son when I went in. But I'd sit there and I knew a lot of people were praying, like all our church. And for some reason in my head, I was like, well, I don't think anybody's praying in the middle of the night. So I'll pray all through the night. I'll go to the NICU and go pray through the night. So I'd pray with them. And I'd stay there because I'd say, is he going to be here in the morning? And they're like, well, we don't know he's going to live or die. And it's like, well, I'm not leaving kind of thing. And so that went on for a few months. And so just that desperate for God. So that was kind of my story. Like, just, God, I can't do this without you. Like, I need you. Mm-hmm. And everything that, you know, Luke, you know, they said, oh, he'd never amount to much or walk, or he'll be stunted. And so, you know, he's like 6'4", you know, like a linebacker, super strong. And he's actually graduating from Trinity with his counseling degree this year and stuff. And so he's doing great. The other kids came and was a youth pastor and for a long time. And God bless that. And, you know, and that's the other thing, too, I think growing up is like, I never, again, all alone growing up kind of, but I never, I mean, good church community, family, good friends, but kind of alone. And so I never wanted to stand out, just kind of hit out on a lot of things and didn't want to be noticed and definitely wasn't the cool kid or anything like that. And so when I went into youth pastoring, you know, there's a lot of youth groups where it's for the cool kids. And I was like, and even to the church to this day, it's like, man, we're just not going to be the cool church. Like, we're not going to be, you know, and I know that maybe that hurts us in some ways, but I'm going to tell you, God must love ordinary people because he made a lot of them.
Yeah.
Our youth group exploded because it's just like, this isn't for the cool, it's for everybody. So like everything was going great. It was just like, God was so good. Like I loved being a pastor. I loved doing it, but it was the desperation caused me to be like, okay, God, I've got to have you or it won't work. Somewhere after the three boys were born. And again, it's not like I have this like moment that it happened in my head, but about 20 years ago, in my mid 30s, I it wasn't like a moment, but it was kind of like this thing in my head where I said, okay, God, I got it. Thanks for all your help. This is through counseling that I understood what I was thinking. It's like, okay, God, now I'll pay you back for all that you've done for me.
Okay.
Like, God, you got me this far. And it wasn't like, okay, I'll handle it now. It's like, no, God, I'll pay you back because you've been so good to me. And I hit a level of anxiety and depression. And this is like before anybody talked about anxiety and depression. So I didn't even know what was going to happen. I mean, I was convinced I was dying.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I ended up in the ER or all these tests and everything else and fear. And I didn't know how to get out of it. I mean, I literally couldn't get out of it. And there's like a whole generation in our church. We dedicate children when they're born. We don't baptize, we dedicate it. And there's a whole decade of kids that are now adults in our church or young adults in our church that I didn't dedicate because I was afraid I would drop the child. Like I was convinced I can't hold this child or I'll drop it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was it was a weird thing. I did preach. I just don't know how I got through it. I really don't. I dreaded life. I dreaded every day. And so I remember sitting in a heart specialist or something. My resting heart rate was 120 beats a minute. And that's without doing anything. So it was just crazy. And so I remember this doctor, because all I was doing like was sitting in the waiting room reading my Bible. And I'd go in and I'd see him and he goes, Daryl, there's nothing wrong with you. But if you don't get a handle on this, he goes, you are literally going to give yourself a heart attack because your body's not meant to do this. Like you are going to do this to yourself. And I'm holding my Bible while he says it. And he goes, and I don't even think he was a Christian. He goes, do you believe what you're reading? And it was just like a breakthrough for me. And I needed to hear that for some reason. Like there's nothing wrong with you. Like you're okay. So once that was established physically, there's nothing wrong with me. I was like, okay, there's something wrong with me. I'm not thinking clearly. I'm not processing these things right. And so obviously I had been to marriage counseling and had an accountability group. So I understood the benefits of counseling. So I just dove in for myself and I realized that my panic, my depression, anxiety, all of that was based on fear. It was based on so many fears. I mean, I don't need to get into all of them here, but just that whole part of growing up alone and not wanting to be seen was actually fear. It wasn't a good thing or a bad thing. It was just fear. It was just like, I don't want anybody to figure me out. It's funny you mentioned Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. You know, my number one fear on that show was to go out on the first question. Like for some reason, it just got into my head, like, don't go out on the first question. And so I actually used a lifeline on my first question because I was so scared. I was just like, and then in my mind, I'm like, why did you use a lifeline? And it's like, you look even more stupid now. And then that's in my head. And just like I don't want to look bad. I don't want to look, you know, fear of man or fear of what or perception or all those things. I mean, it obviously hurt our church and it hurt, you know, my family. And the funny thing is like my church and family were the most encouraging people in my life. They were the best to have around at that time, but I didn't see it. And I didn't even realize what I was going through. And I had so many friends afterwards, like call me and say, I had no idea what you're going through. Why didn't you reach out? But when you're in that moment, and this is a good thing, don't beat up your friends that don't reach out to you. They don't even know what they're doing sometimes. And you be the one to reach out.
Yeah.
And obviously they were hurt that I didn't reach out to them, but that's a whole nother thing. But it's just, I was blind. I was just completely blind to what was happening. So as I thought about that and all this fear that had totally gripped my life, I just had to get back to the beginning and just like, God, thank you for everything you've done, but I don't even want to go on without you. So you got back to that desperation. And so I thought of a parable that Jesus told in the Synoptic Gospels, but when he's at the Pharisee's house and the prostitute comes in and anoints Jesus' feet with perfume, and he shares with her tears and wipes it. And he shares, like, to the Pharisee, you know, somebody's forgiven much, somebody's forgiven little, who loves more? And I mean, we all know the story. Yeah. And obviously it's the one who's forgiven much, right? That's the one who loves more. And like I said, I grew up in church. I love God. Even if I wasn't a pastor, I'd still go to church and serve and be a part. So I probably more on the Pharisee end than the prostitute end. But when I teach the life of Christ and I teach that story, I kind of ask a trick question. I say, okay, on that night in that home, who needed Jesus more? Was it the Pharisee or the sinful woman? Like, who needed Jesus the most that night? And the debate always goes, well, she did because of her sin, or he actually did because he didn't even recognize Jesus when he came in. And it's actually a trick question because they both needed him, right? They both needed Jesus. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's just that one of them recognized their need. And it was like, when I recognize, mm-hmm. look, I'm never paying God back for any of this. And I could spend 1,000 lifetimes and I couldn't pay him back. It's grace. That's the beautiful thing about grace. And it's like, okay, God, I need you. And that's just kind of been my thing ever since, is like, I hesitate to tell the story sometimes because I know people do wrestle with anxiety mm-hmm. and depression as I did. But for me, it was just like, God, I need you. And again, good counseling, there's great medication, there's all those things that really do help. But the desperation for God, like, God, I can't be a husband without you. I can't be a good father without you fathering me. I can't be a good shepherd or pastor without you shepherding me. It's that complete desperation, hunger, like, God, without you, I'm nothing. I need you today because I have no clue what I'm doing. You know, and that's what's funny because you're like, well, look at the education. Look at this. It's like, I don't know what I'm doing. And it's funny. I still get asked to speak at a youth conference, which is hilarious because I look like old as Santa Claus. But so I'll speak. And I one of my first opening lines to students is like, listen, your parents don't have a clue what they're doing. Like, you may think they know what they're doing and they may act like they know what they're doing. But listen, I'm a parent. My kids are out of the house. I still don't know what I'm doing. So if we could go in with attitudes like, God, I don't know what I'm doing. You have blessed me and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
But every good thing I have comes from you. And so I don't want to stop leaning into you. I don't want to stop getting help from you. So
wow, Daryl, see, like, that's just so good to, like, know everyone, like, walks this road and we're all going to have challenges. Like, we could say, like, wow, you said you've been scholarly, you were a pastor's kid, and so obviously you have your stuff together, you know?
That's funny.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just, like, the easiness of life, of just being like, oh, you think you know what somebody's story is, and it's definitely not the case. There's a lot of stuff that goes on in our minds that no one knows of. And you know what? Also, going back to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, I really think it's great, you know what, that you had to ask for the lifeline, because that's what life is, you know? We can't do this life alone. And God says, you know what? I am going to give you this lifeline. Like, you don't have to do this by yourself. I struggle with the same thing of, like, I fear failure. I do not want to, like, not do well. And so that's such a challenge of, you're living in that state and I do want to honor God, but sometimes that becomes almost like forefront rather than God himself. It's just like, well, I got to do this, I got to do that. It's just so interesting.
Yeah, that fear of failure. It's like one of my assignments in counseling was, you have to fail at something. And for Enneagram 3, that's like really fun, right? So it's like, you know, it's funny. They made me go to church and call people by the wrong name or different things like that. I'm like, that's like killing me as a pastor kind of stuff. But it was so freeing. Like, like, just, I'm frail. I'm human. Like, I know I'm human. I know I'm frail, but I don't want to show anybody else that I'm frail. And it's funny because I actually wrote a book for my boys about my experience on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And in it, I talk about lifelines. And I said, the beauty of life is that there's unlimited lifelines. Like, in the show, you get three, but in life, God's grace is never ending. And the people he sends around you, people love you a lot more than you think. They have more grace for you than you have for yourself. And just, like, there's no end to the gifts that God gives us. So tap in that lifeline. Even if it's on the first question, tap into it, go for it every day.
So going back to that period when you were in your 30s and you said you were gripping the pulpit as you were preaching on Sunday. Did everyone know that you were struggling through this, or was that like over time you eventually told them? Because I would love to know, like, what was that season like for your church? And then what happened after? Not to say that we've ever like overcome anxiety and depression, but once you had that breakthrough.
I want to give people hope because there is a way out. I think of it this way. I mean, I don't know who's into Marvel movies and not. I'm not really into that. I mean, my boys are, so I see them. But I remember there was a line that the Hulk uses one time. I forget which movie it was, but he uses the line, "Oh, don't get him angry." And he goes, "I've learned how to use my anger. I'm angry all the time. And I've learned how to use that." And I thought that was interesting because, you know, here's the Hulk. He's angry all the time. I am anxious all the time, but I know how to use it. Like, it's not debilitating anymore. And then just like learning, I'm not afraid. I'm actually excited. You know, and again, counseling helps you determine. It's like getting on a roller coaster. It's like there's fear, but there's actually excitement. And if you tap into the excitement more than the fear, it's going to be a blast. And so just little tricks like that. So my closest people in my life, obviously Leslie was a saint during that time for me and was really, really strong for me. I know it was very hard on her, but she was very strong for me. My closest friends, obviously, some staff and everybody. But this is what's funny is a lot of people were like, "I never knew you were going through that." And I can go back and listen to some of those sermons. I mean, I don't, but if I did, I could hear my voice, the trembling. And again, to be honest with you, I'm not sure how I got through it. I dreaded every moment of life. And so I really don't know how I got through that time other than grace. And I was depending on him even when I didn't realize I was depending on him. But so it probably hurt our church. Our church really shrank during that time. And I don't know that anybody could have put a reason why. I mean, I don't think we've ever had somebody leave the church angry or upset, like, I'm out of here. The Bible says, you know, scatter the shepherd, you scatter the sheep. So they probably knew something was going on, but they didn't know what was going on. And the reality is I didn't even know what was going on. So it's not like I was being dishonest. I was just, I was weak. You know, I was really weak during that time. And the depression part of it too, that's the hard part. As somebody who's a three and fairly outgoing, I mean, I'm an extrovert. I love people. I never thought of myself as depressed. And then when it was diagnosed, it's like, wow, I am. That was even harder than the anxiety for me. It was like, I never thought of myself as a depressed person. I just figured I'd never be that. And then it's like, oh, wow. Yeah. And I think just embrace your weakness, because I think that's something that we get to do in Christianity, is to embrace our weakness. Henry Nouwen talks about it, that we bring our brokenness under the blessing of God. And so he blesses my brokenness, where he also says that in the world, you can't do that, because if you just accept and share your brokenness, like, it'll destroy you. Like, there's no hope. But in our faith in Christ, we can bring our, like, when he broke the bread, he blessed it, right? And so he can bless our brokenness. And so we give it to him. And then all of a sudden, he takes it and multiplies it to the people around us. And so to be honest with you, it's what's interesting is I never thought I'd have a ministry to people that are going through anxiety and depression. But I can't tell you how many people in our church and pastors and friends that I've been able to talk to. And this is the other hard part, that sometimes when you've gone through that and they ask you to write something about it or teach something about it or me talk something, all those feelings start coming back. And it's almost like you're reliving it. So it's really hard. But that weakness helps you minister to other people. You know, God blesses the weakness. So
I think what you said when you first started your parables, like, I didn't think I had what it takes to be a pastor. And I think so many of us, you could switch out pastor with anything, you know, we just don't think that we have what it takes. Yeah. Like, how are we supposed to do X, Y, and Z? And I think that is the challenge for many of us, that gets stuck in our head. But how gracious was God that you felt that, that gentleman, he saw that in you, that you still kept going, and he used that brokenness to continue to flourish and pour into other people's lives. I think that's amazing. I mean, and just for like one person to just have a realization, and you don't even probably know the magnitude of how many people that it has helped. You know, in your bio too, you wrote like, your heart is to see people continually growing deeper in their relationships with God. And I just love for you right now, like, how have you been growing deeper in your relationship with God? I mean, you've been
over 30,
for how
I don't
many
know.
Years?
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
30 years. Okay. As we go through different seasons of our life, we see different things. We feel different things. We have these emotions, and God meets us where we're at. So how have you been growing?
The word faith comes to mind. Like, we live in a world that's so hopeless right now. And I think of even the last few years we've lived through, and all the mental health challenges and all the crises, and, you know, just, is there any hope, right? Is there any hope? And the last year or so, my faith level has grown and grown and grown. And we just, you mentioned the Ascension Convention. Mm-hmm. We actually just got done with that a couple weeks ago. And what has been stirring in my heart, what happened at Asbury, what they call it, awakening, revival, whatever, just that hunger for God. And it was interesting being with teenagers for, you know, a number of days and worshiping with them, praying with them. Like, our Good Friday service was supposed to be done like at 9:30. We went till 2:30 in the morning, not led the old people, led by the teenagers, praying, singing, encouraging each other, and them saying, not me saying, but them saying, what if the spirit of suicide was broken off Gen Z? Let's pray that anxiety, depression is broken off Gen Z. Like, they're praying this, they're prophesying this. And I was like, wow, okay, God. You know, so my faith level the last year or two is just, and it shouldn't have, but it just keeps going higher and higher. So I'll give you an example. Like, so we're done, you know, I'm like, okay, I know that the band needs to go rest because they got to get up at 5 a.m. to practice for the morning service. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to just dismiss the band. Like, this is probably 11:30 at night. We've already gone 2 hours over. I'm just going to send the band home. That'll kind of kill everything. And people will go, and that's terrible, right? The pastor, let's kill the move of God. Here, yeah. Right? So, so I dismissed the band. Like, you guys need to go back to your room and pray. So they all leave, and I just pray for a while. I'm like, okay. And then I just stop thinking, okay, now everybody will just like kind of exit. And these are like hundreds of teenagers. And then all of a sudden they start praying. And then one kid starts a song and they all start singing. Mm-hmm. It was just this wave after wave. And I was like, God, you're doing something that isn't man-made, that this isn't natural. It's actually supernatural. Like, you're pouring out your spirit on us. And so my hope level is growing daily. And in a world where we see school shootings and all these other things, I'm like, God, I'm having hope, and I don't know why. I think I want to be more open to what God is. I want more courage to speak the name of Jesus and say, Jesus is the answer. I don't care what the question is. He's the answer. And I'm seeing it. And on Easter Sunday, one of the groups, the pastor called me. He goes, I don't know what got into my group. It's a church, and they just let the kids come up and share. So they shared what happened. So the pastor didn't even preach that day, because the students said, hey, does anybody need prayer? Come on up. And they prayed over people one at a time. And it's junior high, like, and senior high kids praying and prophesying. And I'm just like, hey, God, you're doing something. I don't know what it is, but man, I'm all in. I want it all. I don't want a part of this, and I don't want to stop it. And man, if I'm old and need to be pushed aside, push me aside, because man, these kids are, this Gen Z is on fire, and I want to see it happen. So that's where I'm at right now. I'm feeling it. And I think Asbury was just the beginning. If we're open to God's move, if we're open and just put some things aside. And I come from a tradition where we can easily put aside our planned schedule and do that. But I think if we could all do that in our heart, but we still get into routine too. I mean, we all do. But if we can just like say, okay, God, they don't need me, they need you, that'll change everything.
What an exciting time. Yeah, it's really cool, because, you know, you're right. We could look at this generation and be like, oh, I don't know. The old TikToks and Snapchat. But truly, like, God is moving. He always has been. And we just need our eyes open, because he's there. And it's really, truly exciting. And you're right. Just have that continued hope. He's going to continue to build that within us and future generations. So, Daryl, thank you so much. Thank you.
Well, thank you. This has been fun.
If people wanted to get connected to you, how can they do that?
I've got a page. It's darylmerrill.info. And you can spell Daryl Merrill a million ways, but I spell it the correct way. So D-A-R-Y-L. And that just connects to Facebook, Instagram, my blog, everything. So good to see you again.
What a great conversation. And I loved how Daryl said that his hope level continues to grow. I'm so thankful that despite aging parents and fears and anxiety and even the mundane, that God promises us hope within him. To connect with Pastor Daryl Merrill, simply visit daniellezapchank.com for details. And now here is a time of a few reflection questions. Number one, finish this statement for me. I didn't think I had what it takes to be a, and fill in the blank. Let me say it again. I didn't think I had what it takes to be a, what is that for you? Maybe this is how you have felt in the past, or you're in that mindset now. How can you take that mindset, that challenge, that worry, that concern to God right now? Number two, Daryl talked about real fears that he had that were gripping him. Is there any of those fears that are maybe lingering around up there in your mind? Maybe some that you need to uncover and you need to let come into the light. One easy way that you can support the Parable Podcast is simply by sharing it with a friend. If you could pass this episode along today, that really helps people find out about these amazing parable stories. And thank you to my technical producer of a husband, Eric, for his top-notch editing skills. That is going to do it for today. I'm grateful that you took the time to spend it with me. Remember, your parable showcases how he knows you have what it takes. We'll see you back again next week on the Parable Podcast. We'll